Hey, everybody. What's up? Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele. Yes, I'm still a Republican. I know what y'all thinking. I know what you're thinking. But you know what I said? I'm the guy with the Motel 6 logo. I'm out on the front porch with the lights on, right? But I'm glad you guys could be with us. You know where to find me usually at Apple, TuneIn, downloads. You know how that goes. We love it when you do that. Stitcher. And all that good stuff. Make sure you check out the podcast whenever you can. I'm glad you're with us today. I'm pretty excited to talk to my guest today. She's a storm chaser and a storm causer. She you know her. You've seen her around the way, as we like to say. Maria Cardona is a seasoned political and policy advocate and strategist. She has more than two decades, and you wouldn't believe it to look at her. I thought this sister was like 18, you know?
I love you, Michael.
Coming out the gate. But she's got two decades of experience in the government, politics, and public relations, community affairs arenas. She's recognized among the most influential Latinos in the country. She's a principal at Dewey Square Group, leading the multicultural and public affairs practices there. Maria is also known for her work as a political commentator and is currently a CNN and CNN in Espanol political contributor. And she has appeared on my air over at MSNBC back in the day.
I did.
She's been at Fox like I was as well. Univision and Telemundo prior to signing her exclusive contract with CNN. But that's all right. We'll forgive you for that. But
thank
it's
you.
A real pleasure having you on board and in this conversation today. We just came off of the vice presidential debate, mm-hmm. and that was fun.
Oh my goodness!
So many levels. You had a great piece though that I recommend to our listeners on the Hill entitled mm-hmm. "Harris Turns Election into Referendum on Trump's Character." Now, why that headline is important and why what you wrote in the piece is important, because you use the word that I think is essential and is why I am with Joe Biden. Look, in any other scenario, probably with any other Republican president, I wouldn't even be looking at Joe Biden, right? Because the character issue for me would not be a question. It would not be a defining thing. But you rode right into that. And mm-hmm. talk to us a little bit about, before we get into the fun of the, you know, debate itself.
The actual debate.
Yeah. Why that stood out for you and why it matters and why it should matter to Americans relative to, you know, any policy, you know, goals or whatever.
Thank you so much, Michael, first of all, for having me on. You know, I love having these conversations with you. And before I get into the gist of what I wrote, I want to sort of do a preamble to that because it really is relevant. You talked about how I used to be on MSNBC and Fox, and frankly, we've been on together. When back in those lovely days, Michael, when we would actually talk about policy.
I know.
When we would feel so passionate about how, you know, our candidates or our president's way of implementing an education policy or an economic policy or an immigration policy was the right thing to do for the country. And you would argue passionately that, no, it was your Republican candidate because here's, you know, all the people that it would help. Right. But it was all about policy and why we felt so strongly that our candidate or our positions were the ones that were going to help more people in the country. And they were beautiful discussions to have, Michael, and I hope to be able to do that with you at some point soon.
Absolutely.
But the reason why I think it's important to bring that up is because we're no longer there.
Right.
We are talking about, you know, and this is why I think Joe Biden, when he announced his campaign, it was absolutely the right way to do it. He talked about, we are in a fight for the soul of our nation.
Right.
This is no longer about policy. This is about who we want to be as the United States of America, which is why what Kamala Harris, what Senator Harris continued to go back to, which I thought was so compelling and effective, mm-hmm. is she underscored that on top of and bigger than the policy was the character and the values that that reflected, right? And so when I talk about how this really is about character and the fact that it is Trump's character on the ballot and this election is a referendum on that, is because everything that he has done from the standpoint of his tweets, his announcements, what he says, and what he does, and his policies, right? We're not mm-hmm. leaving policy out of this.
Right.
Because it is infuriating to me when we have Trump supporters argue, well, don't listen to what he says or what he tweets, right? It's what he does that counts. Okay, look at what he does.
Yeah, let's look at what he's doing.
Right? And what Kamala Harris did so brilliantly was that she connected both of those, and she did not let Mike Pence get away with, first of all, his lies, and secondly, trying to turn this into, oh, well, you know, he might say some things, but look at what he's done. It's everything that he has said, and it's everything that he has done. And what he has said and done is position the United States as a country who prefers people with a certain hue of their skin,
right,
that prefers people with a certain amount of money in their pockets or in their bank accounts, which frankly is ludicrous because we know that Trump is broke and that he owes
that's
somebody,
the other great
we don't know who, $400 million, right? And that he has paid less in taxes than what undocumented immigrants have paid. It is unbelievable. So people should not be confused about what this election is about. Right. When Trump supporters say, oh, look at his policies are all about making us a country that is so far from the values and the morals that we were founded upon and the democratic institutions that represent what we should want to be as a country, that we have to make a change.
Yeah, no, you laid it out there very well. Because I still, Maria, have a hard time. And I've cut short a lot of conversations because of this, this rationalization that many people, and look, the hardcore Trump folks, I get it. When I spar with them, I'm just doing it because I'm just doing it for shits and giggles. I just really want to, you know, be prickly today and just get into a fight because I know I can, and I can end it whenever I want. My problem comes with people I know or thought to be sentient beings, rational beings, who I know what they said about George Bush and his handling of the war and his handling of the economy. And that was on policy. They didn't have any question about his character so much. Although there were even some of these Republicans would from time to time sort of put down his intelligence, which I always thought was offensive, but okay, you can do that, right? But then when it comes to Trump, they just blow past all of that. Because even on the policy point, from healthcare to immigration, from immigration to infrastructure, from infrastructure to foreign affairs, show me the policy that's worked for Americans. Show me the policy. Okay, so if you want to take character out of it, then show me the policy that's worked, because guess what? The tax cuts, if you were middle-class American, you didn't get the benefit of the tax cuts, folks. You just didn't.
Exactly.
And you can sit there and lie about it all day long. I listened to this small businesswoman the other day saying, oh, that, you know, she and her business have done very well. And I'm saying, well, that's good. How have you done personally? I said, yeah, your business probably did well, but how about your employees? Because your employees, I'm sure, unless you were paying them $200,000-$300,000 a year, you know, they didn't get the kind of benefit. So
Girl,
that just kind of went away. That was like what we saw Mike Pence do the other day when he was asked about the president's pre-existing condition position. And he started, he turned it around and started talking. Started talking about some other crazy stuff and challenge and ask, you know, about the Supreme Court, you know, so why won't you go ahead and acknowledge that you're going to stack the Supreme Court? But wait a minute, the question was, where is the president on pre-existing conditions? Right. So that's what she did. So what I'm trying to help folks understand is the rationalizing that people make for Trump in the face of facts, in the face of science, in the face of performance across the board. Why do some of these folks take something that has been essential for generations in this country, mm-hmm. going back really to the founding, exhibited in our first president, George Washington, mm-hmm. that idea of character being the stable. Why do they discount that so much in this race?
Well, that is the question, Michael, because I have also talked to a lot of people who, actually, frankly, not a lot. I got to tell you, I got to be honest. Most of the Republicans that I know are like you.
Right.
And in fact, I'm working very closely with the Lincoln Project. I got to tell you, their ads, and I hope no Democrat sees this, their ads are better than ours.
Oh, no. I get Democrats telling me that all the time. You know, we have purpose behind our ads. I mean, the one thing Republicans can do, we can message a point.
No kidding. And frankly, when you have, and I do think, you know, this issue of character, and we're trying to sort of put people in categories to try to figure out why is it that people are supporting Trump. I do want to say that I acknowledge as a Democrat that we did not speak to everybody that we needed to speak to in 2016. And, you know, that the campaign made a lot of mistakes and we've had a gazillion hours of conversation about that. There were people who went to the polls in 2016 because they felt like they were being left out. That they perhaps didn't love the way that Trump was speaking, but I think they genuinely thought that he would get into the White House and disrupt things for their benefit.
Right.
Right.
Right. I got a lot of that and understand a lot of that.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Me too. And that they were convinced that for 2016, he was putting on a show to get elected. And that once he got into the White House, because he said this too, right? He's like, oh, I can act more presidential than anybody, right?
Right.
They were waiting for that pivot. That pivot never came.
Right.
And it certainly is not going to come now. And you've seen even some of those people saying that they regret that vote and that they're now going to vote for Joe Biden. And so I think, though, we're at the point now, Michael, where the people who are currently supporting Donald Trump fervently, right, and are all in and will excuse everything that he says and does, I think are people that frankly, it is kind of cultish what they have, the bill of goods that they have bought from this man.
Mm-hmm.
And what is also so interesting to me is that he knows the scam that he's running. He said it very clearly, right? That he knows that he has supporters, that even if he stood on Fifth Avenue and shot somebody, he wouldn't lose them.
Right.
Well, these are the supporters that are now, you know, out there saying that whatever this man does is okay. It's not okay, because this election is all about, frankly, not just policies, which we've talked about, that are very hurtful, not just the rhetoric that is very hurtful, but because when you put those two together and you have somebody who has been focused on that kind of policy and that kind of rhetoric for 4 years, what do you get? You get a presidency that has cost people's lives.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I can say it from my community. You can say it from your community. My community has found itself literally hunted and shot down in cold blood by somebody who was inspired by Donald Trump's rhetoric, somebody who was inspired by his words that talked of a Hispanic invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw that as a green light to go do something about it, and they tried.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, that is life and death for our young people who are going out there every single day and who, when a red light goes on of a cop car, instead of saying, oh, okay, you know, I mean, I get nervous when I get pulled over, but my Latino brothers and sisters and my African-American brothers.
Yeah,
and sisters,
yeah, it's a whole different conversation.
They, I mean, you, of course, you know this better than me. They fear for their lives. Fear it for should their lives. Not be that way.
How do you
say we have a president who can't even acknowledge that that's the case?
Well, and that was very telling in both debates, particularly when that subject came up.
Yeah.
And we saw how the president handled it, and we saw the vice president sort of, you know, dance around it and kind of move off of it and not really address it head on. And, you know, it's become a trope for me when they start talking about, oh, well, Black unemployment and Hispanic unemployment is the lowest it's ever been. And, you know, we've put in opportunity zones and we've got, you know, did criminal justice reform. Well, those are the only three things you can list, number one, as if everything else we don't give a shit about. We don't care about the environment. We don't care about
racism,
fiscal policy, infrastructure, all these other things that an administration would be concerned about. You boil down to Black unemployment, Black and Hispanic unemployment, criminal justice reform, and, you know, oh yeah, we'll put some money into HBCUs.
Oh, right. Yeah. They can use that.
Right. So what, when you looked at that, when you saw the debate on Wednesday and the historic importance of it, notwithstanding, I mean, the fact that you have a Black woman standing for Vice President of the United States, what was your takeaway overall? What the country looking at that and looking at her specifically, because what I saw and heard in a number of focus groups that I sort of dropped into and dropped out of in the 2 hours after the debate stunned me. And I want to get your impressions first and what you may have heard and what you thought, and then share some of what I heard, because it, I don't know what they were watching, but it wasn't necessarily the same thing I was watching.
Yeah, I think I know what you're getting at, but let me get you my take first. My take is that Kamala Harris achieved what I think has built up to be the impossible for a Black woman in her position, right? She was up there for the first time in history, a woman of color, and by the way, the daughter of immigrants on both sides.
Yeah, both sides,
right? Another history-making moment. And she was in her element. She was in her power. She was wearing it well and using it adroitly. That might have rubbed some people the wrong way for reasons that we know very clearly why.
Oh my God. Yeah, go ahead.
Right? I mean, let's talk about the fact that racism and misogyny together are two very powerful substantive elements that are sadly alive and well in this country.
Yeah.
And so what she did on that stage, I think that she demonstrated that we are at a crossroads, because she was embodying the kind of country that we could be and that we should be and that we should aspire to be, versus somebody who represented the kind of hatred and fear that they want to inject into the American populace that would keep us from becoming the country that she represents.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there are pushes and pulls on both sides of that. And I heard some things afterward too that I was like, what?
Yeah.
But sadly, that is the case. What I am hoping, though, and what I am seeing that is giving me hope that her version of the America that we want will prevail, is that the enthusiasm in the Latino community, the enthusiasm in the African-American community, in the communities of color, in the immigrant community, and among women. I think Michael is at the point where, and I don't want to take anything for granted because we still have 3 weeks to go. And we got to put it all out and leave nothing on the table because we can't take anything for granted. Right. But I've seen some numbers that have really given me hope. There are more than 1 million new Latino voters that were not 18 in 2016 that have since turned 18 now and are very enthusiastic about voting. Same thing in the African-American community, right. A lot of young new voters. And I know that there's also this thing that the other side loves to, they want that to take fire. And that is that Joe Biden doesn't have enthusiasm from younger voters on our side. We are seeing that while they might not love him, they love the fact that he can be the one to take out Donald
Trump.
Right,
right. And that's a difference maker. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. And so all of those things, Michael, the gender gap, there's no way that Donald Trump can win.
I don't know how he overcomes that.
Let's just say that right now.
Yeah,
right?
That in and of it, when you consider that women make up 53%, of the population, and even more of that in terms of the vote, because men generally, you know, like, whatever.
Right. Tell me what you saw.
It was maddeningly frustrating, not surprisingly offensive. Yeah. We still have a puritanical view in this country of women in power. We still view women through a 1950s mindset, mm-hmm. It's worse than the barefoot and pregnant narrative that used to float out there about women, because
it's more subtle.
It's more subtle, and it completely disregards skill, competency, intelligence, any of that. It just completely disregards all of that. So I heard words like aggressive, offending.
Oh my God.
And I'm sitting here going, okay, so what did she say that so offended you? And it was just the mere presence. There were words the equivalent to, you know, just sort of arrogant and saucy and just, And I'm sitting there, a lot of it, and this, you know, I looked at about 3 focus groups, and one had maybe 15 people, and maybe 6 of them were women. And the women were the worst, to be honest. They were the worst. I was really surprised by that, particularly after Hillary Clinton's campaign, regardless of what you may think of Hillary's policies and her history with the country. You can't take away from the historic nature of what she did and how she accomplished it, but no credit for that.
Women were the worst against her, frankly.
Yeah, and it bled over. It bled over in how people looked at Kamala. So there was, in one group, there was the conversation around a point that she was making on healthcare, mm-hmm. and the fact that when she made the point that, you know, they're coming after you if you want to stay on your parents, they're coming for you if you want to stay on your parents' insurance, they're coming for you if you have pre-existing condition, and that seemed to really rankle folks, because it was just sort of this, you know, sort of smug kind of, you know, thing. And then, you know, the moderator said, well, okay, but the vice president was equally, to use your word, smug. What did you think about that? And, you know, in his answer, and there was like, well, that's different.
Wow. Were these undecided voters?
Yes. And then I concluded in all 3 of the ones that I watched that none of those voters were undecided.
So, can we talk about that for a minute,
Michael? Go for it, absolutely.
Because I could not agree with you more. I think it's, can I cuss on your show?
Yeah, absolutely. I said shit twice already, so you're good.
I think it's bullshit when people say, oh, there's all these undecided voters out there. No freaking way they're not.
No.
I think they lie about being that in order to get into these focus groups.
See, that's exactly right.
Panels that they're
we know these people.
Yes. I think, and frankly, I don't know how any sane person out there could be undecided at this moment.
Yeah. Regardless, whether you're for Trump, against
exactly,
him, support Biden,
exactly.
Everybody right. has a view on this at this point.
Exactly. So I agree with you that I think those voters already know who they're going to vote for, or who at least they were strongly leaning for.
Yeah.
And so to a certain extent, we have to discount them, because I don't think we were going to get them anyway.
Yeah.
You know, there are voters probably that might not love Joe Biden, that don't love Trump, that we could still get, right?
And that's you know, the sweet spot, Maria.
Exactly.
That, you're exactly right.
I think that's the sweet spot.
That's the voter you want to go after, who, you know, and it goes actually to some of the younger voters that you were talking about. I saw on MSNBC this morning polling that showed that, you know, 60% of the Generation Z and something like 70% of Generation X. I mean, they break down these. I mean, you know, at this point, I've lost track after millennial. but what you're finding with these young voters, and you made the point already, they're not in love with Biden.
Right.
They would like to see someone maybe a little bit more progressive on some of their issues. They like to see someone certainly a lot younger than 77
sure.
or 78 years old. I get that.
Yeah.
But what they are saying is that, and you made this point as well, that they're planning to vote. They're going to participate. So 6 out of 10 of those voters are looking, of those young voters, when you average it out, are looking to participate in the process. So that's the sweet spot you want to go
exactly.
to, I would think. It's like, I know you don't love my guy. I know you're not crazy about him, but can you, and look, you and I both probably had mm-hmm. this conversation with our male friends and our girlfriends.
Yep.
And when they, you know, they got a date staring at them and that they don't necessarily want to do. And you're like, look, I know I'm not asking you to marry him, you know, or I'm not asking you to love her. Just go out on a date. Just go, because she's a nice person and
right.
he's a nice guy. Go
right.
check it out. So
right.
that's kind of the spot we're in with someone like Joe Biden, with some voters.
That's
and
right.
not a
you
big
know,
number
I
of them.
I heard a really smart analogy that came from a young person who was one of those voters, right? Bernie supporter, loved Bernie, was all in for Bernie,
right.
but understands that this is an existential election. And the way they put it to me, this was a group of them, was, look, we want to get to the promised land, right? We think Bernie would have taken us closer to that promised land. But we absolutely know that Donald Trump will never get us there, and that
right.
Joe Biden will get us closer to it
right. Right.
than anyone that is running. And so we are going to take the Joe Biden bus,
right?
Get us closer to our promised land,
right?
Then,
and we may have to get out and walk the rest of the way,
right.
but we know we
exactly.
won't have to walk as far under Biden than we will under Trump.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive into our two respective communities and try to figure out what the hell is going on with some of those folks. Great conversation right now we're having with Maria Cardona. We'll have more right after this.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Michael Steele, and we're having, as I said, a conversation with Maria Cardona. You catch her on CNN. You can catch her on at The Hill, where she writes frequently for TheHill.com. So, Hispanic community, Black community.
Mm-hmm.
The president's team has made it very clear, and the president himself has made it very clear, that they want to peel off as much of those respective communities as they can. The president got close to 30% of the Hispanic vote in 2016. 8% of the black vote in 2016. The strategy this time, Maria, seems to be specifically centered on the men in our communities. Mm-hmm. Black and Hispanic men who like, yeah, they like the machismo thing. They like the strong guy thing. You know, we get it. We understand it. Will it work? Is it working? How much of it do you think will result in, you know, I know with the black community, they're looking to pull about 20% of the black male vote, the black male vote, which will probably translate to about 8% of the vote again, because black women ain't feeling it at all.
Right.
So what's your assessment right now of what's going on in our respective communities? When you look at, you know, Florida, particularly mm-hmm. South Florida, you look at the mm-hmm. Cuban community, you look mm-hmm. at the other communities that make up, mm-hmm. and the Hispanic community is much more diverse in that you've got
right. ethnicities.
Ethnicities within this sort of overarching, you know, Hispanic vote. How do you assess it right now? What are you feeling, hearing, seeing out there?
So you hit the nail on the head. It is Latino men, the ones that are the weakest link right now for Joe Biden.
Okay, folks, she said it. I didn't, all right? I'm just saying this so we're clear.
I will own it. But there are a couple of things, flashes that we are seeing that the numbers are moving in a much more positive direction. And for us, and I suspect the same thing is for you, a lot of it has to do with the women in our community mm-hmm. who are slapping some sense into our men.
And then they're catching them up by the collar right now and say, wait a minute.
You know?
No, you ain't doing that.
Exactly. And that is very effective. But from a substantive and a messaging standpoint, Michael, you know, you're right. I think what I have seen for Latino men is that the messaging on the economy has worked really well. And so what Joe Biden and his campaign and his allies are doing and need to continue to do is to bring it home for them in a couple of ways. The first one, by frankly, and I think we need to be doing more of this. And, mm-hmm. and Joe Biden tried to do it a little bit in the first crazy debate. Kamala did it more in her debate, but I think we all need to underscore it even more, which is on this issue of the economy. Let's remember that in the last 3 years of the Obama administration, there was a lot more GDP growth and a lot more job creation than there was in the first 3 years of the Trump administration. And so that's, you know, when you yeah. put it that way, people are like, really? Because the way they talk about the economy, you know, you'd be like,
he started out of recession,
you know? Right. And that's just not true. And in fact, when Obama handed the economy over to Trump, he slowed it down. He slowed yeah. it down, right? And so it was the numbers in our communities, which he loves to tout, they were already precipitously dropping, right? The unemployment rate was dropping in our communities. And so he was just the beneficiary of the final numbers. But guess what? Because of his incompetence on COVID-19 and thinking that the global pandemic was a ruse and a hoax, he never did anything about it. And we are now in such a horrendous economic slump. And who is it mostly hurting, Michael? Our people.
How has COVID played out in the Hispanic community?
Horrible. Let me talk about Florida, for example, right? Florida, there's probably like, I think it's about 37-39% of voters are Hispanic. Mm-hmm. The incidences of infection for COVID is like 55% and
above. Wow.
And the deaths have disproportionately also been hugely Latino. And frankly, we don't even know the real numbers, Michael, because there are a lot of undocumented and mixed status families in our community, as you know, who won't report numbers because they're just afraid of what this crazy government will do with those, right? Our people are more frontline workers than the white community, right?
Yeah.
Healthcare workers,
yep.
first responders, paramedics, and for Latinos.
Can I just real quick put a pin in that point?
Sure.
Because I want to disabuse people of this notion that, you know, Hispanic community, like the African American community, you know, the only thing we're doing is cleaning people's laundry in hotels and cleaning their floors. They are those are frontline workers too, no doubt.
Sure.
But it goes to an overall narrative about how this workforce is truly comprised and who's in it and what they're doing in it. So I just want to, you know, let people know that when you're looking at first responders across the board, from EMTs to police and fire, to certainly our teachers, and so forth, that Black and Brown folks are there together in those spaces as well. I just wanted to, because there's a lot of disinformation on that front. Yeah. So.
No, thank you for bringing that up. That is hugely important. And so these hardworking people who are on the front lines, as you know, even still to this day, aren't getting the support that they need from this president, aren't getting the protective equipment that they need from this president, certainly aren't getting the economic protection and security that they need from this president. You know, this president washed his hands of everyone who is suffering right now because he said he's not interested in a stimulus package until after the election. Then I think he figured out how hurtful that was to him. It's like, oh, no, wait a minute. Okay.
Hey, hold on, time on. No.
Right. I didn't mean that.
We'll do some stimulus.
Right, exactly. But let's be very clear. In every policy that this White House has passed, has been hurtful to our communities, has left our communities out. And those are also realities that we need to speak to our men about. And on the economy, the reason why we are losing so many small businesses, and again, we have more small businesses in our communities, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right.
Proportionately.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs, et cetera. And those small businesses are tanking, and a lot of our workers are out of a job or are in jobs where they can't take a day off, even if they get sick from COVID, because right. they'll get fired.
Right.
And so we just need to talk the facts to our men, because I think that they were so caught up in the strong economy that, you know, and I can understand that, right? That is completely understandable. But I think if we give them the facts and if we give them the truth in terms of what is really going on and what our families really stand to lose if this president becomes president again, and what our families stand to gain if we are able to get him out and get Joe Biden elected along with Kamala Harris, she will have our back, no question. Joe Biden will have our back, no question. And we will be able to hold them to account. That's right. Another thing, right? This president doesn't listen to anybody who has our color skin, Michael. And even though they might say they do, they don't. They don't care. How many times has he talked about people from shithole countries, right? Those are my ancestors. Those are your ancestors.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so we just need to talk to reality to them and frankly put it on what a future for our families and our children will look like if they continue to support this man.
Do you think they'll listen?
I hope so. I really hope so. And I just think that we have to do everything that we can between now and November 3rd to make them listen, right? By any means necessary.
Yeah. Where have I heard that before? I like the sound of that.
Because it really is. I mean, you know, one of the other things that is so, we talked about this a little bit, but I think it really just bears repeating, because it's not just the Latino community that has suffered disproportionately from COVID. African Americans are being infected and are dying much more so also in disproportionate numbers.
Yeah.
And what this president's answer is, it is what it is, right? And he now believes that having been infected with COVID was a blessing from God, right? Because we're all going to get the same kind of treatment he did if we get it, right,
Michael? Right. I do. Yeah. I was like, no, brother, that's not how that's going to work out.
Right, exactly. And so all of those things, Michael, I think if we connect it to the lives and livelihoods of our community, of them and their families and their children, I think we'll be able to bring them along.
So before we let you get out of here, how do you see on a big scale the Supreme Court battle that we have right now and the subsequent truth and reality once Amy Coney Barrett gets on the court versus, you know, how you see it playing out in minority communities at the moment? Is that something that we're focused on?
Not as much as we should be. You know, I will say that one of the things that Republicans writ large and conservatives have done brilliantly and have really kicked our ass in is making Supreme Court pick election issues.
Right? I tried telling folks several years now.
Listen to you for sure. I know it. I know it.
And it's not just the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. It's courts in general.
I got two African Americans on the court, on the state court in Texas, and the first African Americans elected to the state Supreme Court in Texas, 2010, baby, because we focused on it.
Absolutely. So that needs to be something where we have a lot to learn from Republicans on this, for sure. I think on this issue, though, I am trying to bring it up as much as I can.
Right.
Because, and it was interesting, because when this happened, I actually called the Lincoln Project and I'm like, are you guys still with us? Because this, you know, because it's a Supreme Court pick, and that was such a huge thing. And, you know, to my satisfaction and to, you know, I was super happy to hear that they think this is bigger than that. Right.
Yes.
And so I was thrilled to hear that. And frankly, they are mirroring now what the majority of the country believes, right? The majority of the country believes, let's wait until the election and let the person who's elected pick that seat, right? What I have tried to tell my Latino brothers and sisters is that regardless of what happens in the Supreme Court, this should be a wake-up call to our community to understand how the courts, because again, much more so than in the mainstream community, Michael, for us, for our people, the courts are a lot of times the place of a last resort for justice. And we don't have people on those benches that look like us, right, we're never going to get the equity and the equality that we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am hoping that this is a conversation that is developing and is ripening in our communities, especially on the issue of immigration, right? I think people have seen, because of the Supreme Court and the DACA issue, people have seen really what effect judges have on the everyday lives of Americans.
How does that settle out the immigration issue? Because it's not a question. I hate when people say, well, the immigration question. No, it's not a question. It's an issue that needs clarification. Mm-hmm. And it's an issue Americans, I think, fundamentally do appreciate in the main. It's like what we've seen in the gun space in terms of, you know, card carrying hardcore gun owners who say, yeah, we need to find a level space here in how we address issues of violence and gun use in the country. Same is true in the immigration space. A lot of folks like myself who believe you got to do it the right way. Okay. The line forms there. All right.
Right.
Also recognizes what that beautiful woman standing in New York Harbor with the torch in her hand, who's been there for 100 years saying, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free. What that's all about. How do you see, and how can the Hispanic community play a leading role in helping America appreciate what this narrative is for them?
That's a great question, Michael. And I want to give kudos to the group of mostly Latinos, but not all Latinos, mm-hmm. who have really put this front and center and whom the American public has embraced. And that's the Dreamers.
Yeah.
The Dreamers have really put this issue exactly like you just described it, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of our conversation, we talked about character. The issue of how we treat our Dreamers is all about the character of this country, right? Yeah. These are kids who were raised in this country. They know no other country as their own other than this one. Mm-hmm. Many of them don't even know how to speak the language of the country of their birth.
It's true.
They are here through no fault of their own. And many of them didn't find out that they were undocumented until they were trying to apply for college or trying to apply to their first job. And so these are heartbreaking stories. A lot of them are, you know, summa cum laude, magna cum laude, mm-hmm. inventors, entrepreneurs, you know, brilliant people. I had the privilege.
And the service they give to our military.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, exactly. They put their life on the line for us. I had the privilege of giving the graduation keynote speech at University of California, and one of their campuses that was mostly undocumented immigrants that went because it was in the Central Valley.
Right.
And I heard these heartbreaking stories, Michael, heartbreaking on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's like, this is what this country is all about. You had a graduate student that was at the top of his class at the school who was inventing and patenting a drone type of equipment that would help hydrate and irrigate the fields much more efficiently,
mm-hmm.
while his parents were working in those fields to get him through college.
Wow. Wow.
And he was undocumented. He was a DACA student. And so that, I mean, what is more American than that? Mm-hmm. Right. And so these kids, I think, have really put a face on what the immigration issue is all about. And I love that the majority of the country, Democrats, independents, Republicans, conservatives, believe that DACA and Dreamers should be given a pathway to citizenship. Everyone except for this president, who's listening to people like Stephen Miller, who is a self-described white nationalist. And that is another huge problem that we have with this president.
Well, they are legion, as they say. And, you know, the voices that the country needs right now on this and so many topics, I think rest in the DACA community, rests with our young people, mm-hmm. especially who this is their season.
Absolutely.
Where
the Black Lives Matter movement.
Yep,
oh my goodness.
Exactly. Where they get to redefine the American story. Exactly. You know, I'm at the tail end of the baby boomers, and our generation are at a point where we're now looking at the seeds that have been planted and did our best and have done our best and continue to some degree to do our best to germinate those seeds and get them ready. I think they're ready. And I have that hope that, you know, this election, I say this in addition to wear the damn mask, get your damn ballot.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And vote.
Absolutely.
You cannot sit on the sidelines for this one, because if you have a part-time job, a full-time job, if you are in some cases at 18, 19, 20 years old, the breadwinner in your family, or you are supplementing that income so your younger siblings can go to school, or your parents can provide a little bit more for the family,
right.
You have a stake in this election.
Yes.
And it will matter who sits in the Oval. It will matter who sits in the governor's chair. It will matter who represents you in the United States Senate and Congress. So, you know, listen to what Maria has been saying and mm-hmm. take heed to your responsibility. You know?
Thank you. You too, Michael. You said it beautifully. I mean, I think we need to be clear that for anyone who is looking to sit this out, a non-vote is a vote for Donald Trump. Let's be very clear about that.
Exactly.
Very clear about that. If you are not going to vote, that is the same thing as filling out your ballot with Donald Trump as the little check mark.
There you go. There you go. I couldn't have said it better.
Yeah.
Maria Cardona, you're one of the best out there. I love it when we got to spar on TV. I hope we get to do that again.
Hopefully soon again,
hopefully
right,
soon.
Michael?
That's right. That's right. But it's a real pleasure for you to take
Thank
the time
you.
To stop
I love
by the
you,
podcast.
Brother. Thank you for this opportunity. It's great to
and
be with
continue
you.
Continue the good work that you're doing.
Thank
and
you.
Behave yourself. Folks, that does it for
try.
Now. But you're going to have more fun. Don't worry. You get to download this episode. Share it with your friends. Check out Maria for sure. Maria, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm at Maria T. Cardona, and on Twitter and on Instagram, at Maria Cardona DC. And I'm going to make a shameless plug, Michael, because
Please.
Me and a Republican colleague on CNN have started our own podcast.
Oh,
it's
wonderful.
Called, and we want to have you on as our
yes,
guest, by the way.
You know I'm going to do that now.
Thank
Come
you.
On.
Thank you. It's called Hot Mics from Left to Right. And the
Excellent.
Gist of the podcast, and I think this is also really important to have, is that we can disagree. She is going to vote for Trump, but she doesn't like him. She's one of these Republicans whose issue for the Supreme Court
right.
is the be all and end all. And, you know, and that's fine. We get into issues. She calls him out when she needs to call him out. And I love her, and we are able to have these conversations, and I don't hold anything back, and she doesn't either, but we do it civilly, and we do it with respect, and I think that is something that the country is hugely missing. So,
who's your co-host?
From left to right.
Who's your co-host?
Alice Stewart.
Oh,
you
Alice.
Know her.
Yes, absolutely.
So
oh, I love Alice.
And Michael, we will have you as our guest.
Yes, I've actually had Alice on the podcast before. So
early
days when we started out, and she's a great lady.
Yeah.
And I appreciate her very much, and appreciate you too. And certainly I look forward to coming on Left to Right. Right? I love it.
Hot mics from left to right.
Hot mics from left to right. I love it. I love it. Well, that'll do it for now, folks. Again,
you,
don't
Mark.
Forget to do our download thing at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcasts on, Spotify. We'll have more fun next week. And don't forget, wear the damn mask
and
get
and
the damn
vote.
Ballot.
There you go.
All right. Thanks
Michael.
A lot now. Take care.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. lostgolfballs.com.